may not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, staff, or its advertisers. Change only happens when we, the people, become part of the solution. That's why more and more patriotic Americans are tuning in to the Power Hour. Now, here's your host, Dave Krieger.
And it's 12 noon, and for those of you wanting to dial in, the Power Mall, of course, is open, 877-817-9829. You got to help us stay on the air here because we have so much unfolding information going on. As I told you, we were going to have, and I thank God that this man had time to take out of his busy schedule to join us on the show today. And you can watch it on Rumble. There will be a rebroadcast there. You tell your friends if they missed it to go there. You can go to thepowerhour.com, dial it up on the website, and you can join this interview because Bud Cummins, who is the Malinowski family attorney, joins us today to talk about the details of what we know so far. And, of course, after yesterday's testimony from ATF Director Stephen Dettelbach, and I am not reading a script here. I am totally on the ad lib here, and this is what you're going to hear. All this stuff is just, it's deep-seated in my heart and in my soul, and I am sorry, but I just see too many things gone wrong here that mimic the fact pattern and the way that ATF behaves. Bud Cummins, thank you so much for joining us.
Dave, thank you for inviting me on your show.
Now, the thing is, Bud Cummins, you used to be an assistant U.S. attorney. And
I was actually the U.S. attorney.
Oh, you were? Okay. Well, see, I don't know why they kept referring to you as an AUSA. I didn't understand that. So you were the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the Eastern District.
Okay. And now you're in private practice.
Yes.
And how did the Malinowski family know to reach out to you?
Well, actually, it's a long story. It's probably not that interesting, but it was kind of just a sequence of events where I was talking to the U.S. Attorney's office, and they were trying to reach out to the family and wanted to ask me if I knew who their attorney was. I said I didn't, but I knew one of their friends, and I called the friend and said, "Hey, have their attorney call the U.S. Attorney's office." And then Mrs. Malinowski called me and said she didn't have an attorney and asked her if I would help.
Wow. No, I mean, that even if it's a roundabout short version, that really helps get this picture in line because I want people to understand.
It's kind of accidental, actually.
Yeah. But see, there's a reason why you were put in the path. I believe there's always a reason why you were put in the path, that you became involved in this case directly. And so here they have this lady who is like 2 feet behind Brian Malinowski when he thinks that his home's being invaded. I just talked about something very similar that happened in a home invasion where people were murdered in Kansas when I was a news reporter in Kansas City. And they literally cut the phone line, turned off the power, came in, murdered two of the kids, kidnapped one. Father was asleep upstairs. The kid shows up with his skull bashed into the ER where his mom is the nurse in the ER. And there's her kid laying on the table. I mean, all this stuff is just scary as hell. And then we find out, you know, that we have another home invasion. He doesn't know any different. There's nobody there identifying themselves as ATF agents. Not that I can tell. Otherwise, I don't believe Mr. Malinowski would have ripped any rounds. That's the thing.
And on that point, Dave, if your listeners would just, when they're bored, go Google home invasion fake police, and you'll see that actually people pretend to be police all the time and kick people's doors in. Not all the time, but it's certainly not unheard of. There's more than a handful of incidents that'll pop up if you go do that search. And so just assuming that somebody else police, if you hear that didn't happen here. But if you heard that in this day and age is not, you know, an assurance that you're dealing with law enforcement.
But the thing is that you literally, because they would announce that, you would let your guard down, would you not? Out of respect for the law.
But the whole purpose of an exercise of executing a search warrant, and we can discuss whether it was even, you know, rational to try to execute a search warrant in this particular case. But if you're going to execute a search warrant, and even if you're going to do it at 6 a.m, there's a number of ways to do it that would have completely avoided this tragedy. I mean, I'm aware of the FBI executing a search warrant within the last week on a person, and they came to his home. They came with the SWAT team. They surrounded the home. And then guess what they did? They called him on his cell phone and said, "Hey, we're here. We have a search warrant. Would you come out?" He said, "Sure." And he came. They said, "Look out the window. See the police cars. You know, it's us." And they, he came out, and he's still alive today. That's one way to do it. I could sit here and tell you probably, you know, 50 other ways they could do it.
But see, they didn't do that, and it was 57 seconds later. I mean, it's all over the news. I mean, even Jim Jordan knew this.
They kicked in his front door with no – if they announced it was not heard by the occupants at 6 in the morning in their bedroom in a 3,000-square-foot house, and the first thing they heard was their front door crashing open. That's it. They heard no announcement. They heard no voices say police. And even if they had, like you said, I mean, we think, we don't know that they cut the electricity. We believe they did, but we don't know that. It would have been easy to do. The master switch is easily accessible on the outside panel of the house. We know they covered up the Ring camera. If you woke up and heard somebody kick in your door and yell police, and you looked at your Ring phone, for instance, and it was covered up, and you turn on your lamp and it didn't come on, I don't know that you would just rush out to the front door and say, "Oh, I know it's the police." But that didn't happen here either. What happened was they heard a crash and they responded to it. And all they had to go on was they saw dark figures uninvited in their home.
And so the interesting thing, though, is that the initial reports indicated that Mr. Malinowski fired shots down toward the ground. He didn't fire him up in the air. He didn't actually go for the kill shot.
You know, I'm not a ballistics expert, but it's pretty apparent by the bullet holes that are visible in the house that he shot roughly, and he hit one of the agents in the foot. He shot at an angle that was definitely below the knee and probably at their feet. In my view, just try, you know, and this is conjecture, he's not here to explain it, but in my view, he came around the corner, looked down a dark hallway, saw uninvited persons in his home. His wife was there, and he shot at their feet to, I presume, say, "You may think we're not home, but we are. And in fact, we're armed, and you need to get the hell out of our house." I mean, that to me, that's kind of what the message was. But
well, it looks like it was a scare tactic to get him to turn around and run out. But that's not what happened. I mean, they literally opened fire and put
they're law enforcement, yeah. So they return fire. They're trained to do that, and nobody really is disputing that once they created this entire situation and brought it to a point where somebody was shooting at them, they shot back. That's predictable. The question is, was everything that happened up to that reckless, unreasonable, unnecessary, and probably illegal?
Well, it appears from what Mr. Dettelbach said. I mean, you obviously saw the speech, right? You've been monitoring.
Right behind him.
Oh my goodness! Oh my! I didn't even look to see. All I could just see
was
him.
I was in the second row. His staff intentionally filled up the first row. They didn't want me or anybody else looking over his shoulder that closely. But I was sitting with Mrs. Malinowski and Brian's mother and his sister in the second row.
Oh, my. Watching this in horror. What did they say?
It's actually a dramatic moment where one of the congressmen challenged the ATF director to stand up, asked Mrs. Malinowski to stand up and challenged the ATF director to stand up and apologize to her. Which he did. He did not stand up. He made a half-hearted and very awkward attempt to say he was sorry, but, and then they moved on. But it was pretty dramatic.
And see, these are the things that the mainstream media doesn't appear to want to cover because a lot of them want to make it look like Malinowski was at fault. You know, because he didn't just lay there and roll over for some what he thought was a home invasion. This is a thing that bothers me.
The left and people in that, you know, there's a political issue here. Look, I represent Brian Malinowski. You know, he probably had opinions about gun rights. I have opinions about gun rights. But for the purposes of this discussion, me speaking on his behalf and his family's, let's take no position on the political issues that have gone on for years about private sales of guns. It's been going on for years. There's been some very political maneuvering by ATF and the White House in the way they're manipulating the rules. But let's take no position about who's right or who's wrong. any rational person would look at the regulations that exist and say they're unintelligible. The smartest lawyer I've ever met cannot read those regulations and tell me who can and cannot privately sell firearms without a license. And so, the idea that they would pursue somebody like Brian, a law-abiding, well-respected citizen who made over $250,000 a year, where part of the definition involves is selling guns your primary livelihood, the idea that they would pursue him with criminal process in this way, and even under suspicion of violating that rule, is outrageous, and it should frighten every American. Because let's say you're for gun control. Let's say you think Brian was wrong to sell guns. A lot of people obviously feel that way, and so they change the violation. This is one of the lowest level violations that they could drag into a U.S. attorney's office for prosecution. The penalties are practically probation or less. And so what if it's another issue? What if it involves abortion, your right to go get an abortion, and you feel strongly about that, and the government thinks you violated some low-level law, and they kick your door in and kill you? Do you feel, we shouldn't? My point is, forget what they were investigating. The idea that for any low-level crime where they had no evidence that there was any danger involved, no what we call in the law exigent circumstances, to justify these tactics and this, it should scare us all. Because if the government thinks it's okay to kick in Brian Malinowski's door at 6 a.m. without warning and kill him, then they'll do it to any of us for any reason. There is no limitation. So everybody really needs to focus on that. Clearly, it's even worse to me, because I do understand the political issues at stake and the political debate around gun control and their efforts to regulate the private sale of firearms, that this might have been politically motivated because the president was about to announce a new regulation where he was going to take credit for closing what they called the gun show loophole. And this might have been some agency out trying to show off or enhance the president's announcement, mm-hmm. which isn't really unusual in the Department of Justice. In my experience, it just was more important law enforcement priorities when it happened. If the president speaks on a law enforcement priority, it's usually a pretty important one. This is a low-level political issue, and I think they put the word out, said if anybody has a good case to highlight when the president makes his comments in a couple of weeks, let us know. And somebody in Little Rock thought they, were going to punch their ticket to promotion and went haywire. That's my theory. I can't prove all that, but mm-hmm. if that happened, it makes what this tragedy seem, even if it's possible, to be worse.
Right. A neighbor ratting out somebody or whatnot. I mean, the neighbors all there like the guy. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, he is the executive director. He did so much. I know a lot of people called me and go, well, he had the goods on the Clintons. I said, no, I'm not buying that. There's no evidence of it. They didn't disappear like people in MENA. That did not happen. So, don't go there. Don't, this is some guy that basically this is his mainstream job. He helped expand the airport. I mean, the guy was a good guy. And because he liked to go to gun shows and talk about stuff, all of a sudden now he gets a tracker on his car, which brings me to the next question. Have you seen that tracker? Did they show it to you? Did they take it off his car after the raid or before the raid or whatever?
I don't know the answer to any of those questions, and I have not yet sought the affidavit to support the placement of a tracker on his car. It was the airport's car. They owned it. And I think almost immediately after his death, they came and got it. So if I assume that ATF had control of the car and the house for almost an entire day on the day of the search, that they removed it that day. But that's just my assumption. I don't have the short answer is I don't have any information about the tracker.
Right. OK, that fair enough.
Except this information that, too, is unbelievable overkill in the investigation of a gun show case, even if there was legitimate law underlying the investigation of a gun show case. But if you watched the hearings yesterday, if you didn't learn anything else, you learned that the ATF couldn't tell you what the rule was before Brian died. And now that they have a new rule, the ATF director can't tell you what it means. He can't answer it. Look, if an Arkansan comes to his lawyer and says, I'd like to sell some guns, and under these circumstances, this is about how many I think I want to sell, and this is where I want to sell them, this is how I want to sell them. Is that legal? There's not a lawyer in Arkansas that could look at their rule and tell you the answer to that. But I can tell you this answer. The ATF will decide when they want to decide whether it's legal. And if they decide arbitrarily that you committed a crime, they'll come to your house now, we know, with a search warrant and put a tracker on your car and follow you around town and kick your door in. And if you, you know, want to defend yourself, they'll kill you.
Wow, that's pretty
direct.
That's
what we learned yesterday. That's all we learned yesterday.
Oh, my God. You know, see, it is this, the audacity of the government to stand there. And the only thing that he said that was a fact was his agent got shot. I played the entire clip this morning of Jim Jordan's segue with the segment that Jim Jordan did with Dettelbach. And that's the only thing that he admitted to, that our agent was shot. And I'm just like befuddled. I'm like, dude, you... Oh, we're still investigating. I said, no, you've already, I mean, the Arkansas State Police already investigated. The stuff was turned over to the district attorney.
Well, to that point, Dave, he's hiding behind this ongoing investigation, like government officials love to do. He's refusing to answer questions they're asking about the protocols and the policies and the methods. And because he said, well, it's under investigation. Go Google the Arkansas State Police news release the day they handed the investigation file over to Will Jones, the Pulaski County prosecutor. It expressly says we did not endeavor to investigate the methods, practices, policies, or procedures employed in this execution of the search warrant. So what I think Arkansas State Police is saying is we're not going to get drug into all that. What we're investigating is probably did Brian shoot first? And if we conclude he did, and then they return fire, that we're done here. That's all we're going to look at. They're not going to try to prove reckless homicide case because the ATF made incredibly incompetent decisions, a stream of them that led to Brian Malinowski's death. They're not even apparently going to look at whether their forced entry was a legal one. I believe it was not, but I'm not sure the Arkansas State Police is going to endeavor to even investigate that.
Yeah, that's sad because it's a hot potato they don't want to touch, and that's what makes it so much more political.
Could answer questions about their choice of tactics and procedures and their training and their policies because that's not under investigation. The state police said it's not. And the FBI could be investigating this. But I have no, as far as I know, I have no evidence to tell me that they are making any effort to investigate this. They investigated Breonna Taylor. They could investigate this as a constitutional rights violation. Brian Malinowski's constitutional rights were violated, clearly. And the FBI doesn't seem to be interested in it. So.
Looks like the big cover up to me, but I guess our listeners and the American public are going to take it for what it's worth. They're going to look at this at face value, and then they're going to try to read between the lines, which is what you, I'm sure, have been doing this entire time with this investigation. Now, I have a copy of the warrant. I got a copy of that right before it was released. I know the Arkansas Gazette and the Arkansas Times and various other newspapers, they are covering this heavily to see what's going on. And every so often I'll see one of these reports pop up. But, when you look at something that smacks in the face of Waco and Ruby Ridge and some of these other things where they've changed the rules of engagement and they're supposed to do this. I mean, I looked at the front of the warrant and it said there was no arrest warrant. There was nothing there checked for that. It was a search warrant. They had allegedly probable cause. But at that time, there was no actual rule on the books that said Mr. Malinowski couldn't go to gun shows, that he couldn't engage in private firearm sales. It was not his primary business. He wasn't there to make a killing. I mean, a search warrant basically means we're looking to see if there's any evidence that supports what we said in our affidavit. And see, with Waco, Davey Aguilera, the ATF agent there that gave that affidavit, basically lied to Judge Green. I mean, everybody that knows anything about Waco knows what happened. And here we have 70-some-odd women and children dead. And Koresh, of course, you couldn't even identify his body if you looked at it. It looked like a pool of mush. And, of course, then they came with bulldozers and bulldozed over all the evidence. So, based on those factors, we have to look at what happened to Brian I mean, don't think we haven't been paying attention to this, bud, because we have, and we care. We're U.S. citizens, just like Brian Malinowski was.
Yeah, we should care about Brian, but, you know, selfishly care about yourself, because these are, you know, this is what Chairman Jordan refers to as the weaponization of government. Well, yeah, because when I was U.S. attorney, this wasn't even considered an important enough crime that we spent really any time on it. If somebody got drug in there by ATF and it looked like they were well beyond the statute, we probably put them on probation or even agreed to tear it up, you know, a diversion. Just stop doing what you're doing and we'll tear this up. That's the level. You know, none of us went to the U.S. Attorney's Office to prosecute cases like that. But when they elevate it to this level of importance because this is the number one issue for gun control folks. Go to Brady Center's website or Everytown. And it's also revealing, if you go to the Everytown website, there's about a 10-year-old article on there about this private sale issue. And it goes into great detail, complaining that the definitions are impossible to understand and that people have gone to trial. Like half the people that went to trial got acquitted, which is unheard of, because juries looked at it and said, these definitions are impossible to understand. So they make the case right there. And those are the same rules that were in effect when Brian was going to gun shows. So we all need to pay attention when the government starts it's so blatant, this dual system of law enforcement. And it will destroy our country. They're destroying trust in government. They're destroying trust in law enforcement. And so it makes it more likely, more dangerous for a law enforcement officer to go out in the field and do his work, because people don't trust him because of stuff like this. And it's a leadership problem. You and I know the guys on the front line, they sign up for all the right reasons. They want to do good. They're not. It's the leadership, and it's corrupt, and it's got to be stopped. It just has to be stopped before it's too late. The question I have and that other people have is, well, when do we do something? When is it time to, you know, how do we stop it? And when is it time for me to put my life and liberty at risk to help it? And you know, I think we're going to wait till it's too late. If you sit by and watch them what they did to Brian Malinowski and then just go back to work and go on about your business, you know, whatever happens to you, you know, you probably deserve it.
I always say you get what you get. I
mean, you get what you get. Yeah. But I don't know. I can't answer the question. I don't know what is the right day for me to, you know, just say, okay, enough is enough. I'm going to take huge risks here to try to stop this. I don't know, but I know that I know we should all be worrying about that question. I mean, you know, I guess we're supposed to go win an election and then, you know, change the policy. And I hope we can at least do that.
I hope so. But I've been telling people, please don't stay home and let somebody else do your thinking for you at the polls. This is very important. But see, the thing is now the Malinowskis, who were there, that was a shock. I didn't even realize they attended. But they're close enough to D.C. At least some of them, I think, live in eastern Pennsylvania. I did some backgrounding on a lot of them. And the thing is, I mean, these are people. I mean, she's a realtor. I mean, they're very, very well, you know, well-to-do. To an extent, I mean, these aren't bad people. They don't have a bad history. I mean, the entire family. And then to have Mrs. Malinowski right behind Brian within 2 feet of him, I mean, they could have nailed her too. But then they take her in her night clothes and make her sit in a car for 5 hours while they do the search that they were supposed to legally have conducted without taping the front ring camera. I mean, the thing is now I know the Malinowski family, Bud Cummins, wants answers, and they're not getting it. And I don't know that they'll ever get it without you filing some sort of litigation. Is that in the cards?
Well, it's certainly a possibility. I mean, it's been disappointing. I think the Malinowski family,
Bud Cummins, wants answers, and they're not getting it. And I don't know that they'll ever get it without you filing some sort of litigation. Is that in the cards?
Well, it's certainly a possibility. I mean, it's been disappointing. I think the Malinowski family and you know, my style is to be fair and try to wait for the facts to all come out. And we've, you know, we're 2 months now, we're past 2 months, and really, except for them providing information that no body cams were worn, we've not been given any information, none, zero. And I, you know, the silence is kind of deafening. I mean, for ATF to have not said a word to try to publicly justify, they hide behind this ongoing investigation deal, but I can tell you, I've worked there. they're completely allowed to go out when there's a matter of great public concern. And this is one, clearly, in the state of Arkansas. I've never had more people approach me on anything I've worked on or anything that's been reported on and tell me they're concerned about it. This is clearly a matter of public concern, and their rules completely allow them to come forward and provide explanations to, you know, calm the public's concerns. I don't think they have any. I don't think they have anything to tell you that would make you feel better about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, the average person on the street just looks at the bare facts as to what we do know. And they think, look, if this was just a search warrant, why'd they have to kill the guy? I mean, they could have announced their intention, but, you know, did they make an example out of him and say, hey, by the way, you know, if you are going to play with this gun show thing, we're going to come to your house and we're going to put a bullet in your head. I mean, what kind of example is that? You were talking about the dual and the weaponization of government, the dual system of justice here. I mean, you were a U.S. attorney. And I mean, God bless you for your service, sir. Now you've been put in another precarious position where you would literally have to look at the other side of the coin, not the government's position, but you're weighing both sides. Conclusions?
Hey, when I became a U.S. attorney, you know, politics has always been around, and you can't ever completely, you know, express it out of your work when you work for the government. But I can tell you this, right before I was the final steps of becoming a presidentially nominated and Senate confirmed U.S. attorney, I had to meet with the attorney one-on-one in a room, and it was John Ashcroft, and he looked me in the eye and he looked at my resume and he said, Bud, you know, I can see that you have a political background, you've been very political. He said I've been a very political guy. Yes. You know, he'd been a governor and a senator, but he said, I've studied the history of the Department of Justice, and every time the Department of Justice has gotten into trouble, it's because somebody forgot that you have to leave politics at the door. We have to administer justice evenly and fairly. And I mean, he could be a very friendly guy, but he could be also like a tough football coach. And he was staring me down. And I mean, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And he pointed at me. He said, if you can't remember that, you're not going to be here very long. That's how the leadership worked under John Ashcroft. Mm-hmm.
Well, and they have cases, too.
Not quite as much when Alberto Gonzalez became president. He thought his job was a little more political, and he got it, and he paid a price for it. You know, he proved the point. He paid a price for it. But now Alberto Gonzalez's transgressions are this big. They've completely destroyed the credibility of the Department of Justice, a place that I you know, revered when I worked there, and it's a proud moment in my career. But it's inescapable how they've weaponized the Department of Justice, and I hope there's a new president and he orders a top to bottom rebuild on the Department of Justice. I'd love to be a part of it if that happens, but I hope the new president doesn't turn the guns around and try to use it like they've used it, which would be tempting retaliation, but it has to be even-handed and fair, or people lose trust. And you got to believe if they come for your brother or your son or your dad that there's a reason, and it's not just because they voted for the wrong person.
Yep, there you have it. Bud Cummins, thank you. Yep, thank you so much. I mean, it's been a blessing having you on the show again, and we appreciate all your comments and concerns. And as this case unfolds, we would like to invite you back on the show.
Happy to do it. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, sir. God bless you. We'll be back with Leighton Gray after these important words. Stay with us.
Flaxseed oil from North American Urban Spice. Exclusively from the genetic source and never standardized. Cold pressed, it's so good. It supports cardiovascular, respiratory, immune, digestive, neurologic health, and so much more. Said to be good for everything but death itself, come find the best prices on black seed capsules or 8-ounce varieties when you visit thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829 to purchase.
Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle Dew products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle Dew Skin Lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle Dew Moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle Dew products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Many Americans are growing increasingly concerned about the rapidly growing U.S. government deficits. Recognizing that the additional printing of paper money devalues U.S. currency. To compensate, American gold and silver coins will provide wealth protection. U.S. Coin Capital provides physical gold and silver coins delivered directly to our clients. You can reach us at 1-800-878-2646, uscoincapital.com.
Hi, this is Linda from the Power Mall. I would like to tell you about a product that I personally take and recommend. I was very drawn to the Bone Active Topical Rub because I want to build healthy bones and prevent age-related bone loss, which so many of my friends have. Bone Active Oil contains three of the most potent mountain herbal oils known to man: sage, rosemary, and oregano. I rub it on my joints and on the bottom of my feet, and an added bonus is that it smells amazing. Not only is it potent by just rubbing it on the body, but also can be taken internally. Take advantage of the research. Use Bone Active rubbing oil and capsules to support a healthy overall bone density response. I'd love to talk with you more about this product. Call me at 877-817-9829 or learn more by visiting thepowermall.com.
It is now 32 minutes after the hour, 12 noon Central Time where we are. And, of course, we move on to a different subject again. Boy, that was that last half hour was something else, wasn't it? This is something everybody needs to be paying attention to, and there's something else. There's all these military-aged men who are Chinese invading this country at our southern border. And everybody has had discussions and surmisings of what these men may be able to do. Some of them may have IT skills that they can hack into our system and shut it down. And I'm talking about the power grid. Leighton Gray is with us. He is the host of the Gray Matter podcast. He's a litigator by trade, so that must mean you're an attorney.
That's true.
Welcome to the show, sir. When I see that word litigator, I'm a paralegal, and so okay. I'm helping defend foreclosures. What do you litigate?
Lately, mostly COVID litigation and human rights lawsuits, class actions.
Wow. COVID litigation. See, another one near and dear to my heart. You work with the former feds group?
I've been working mostly with the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms in Canada. Some of your viewers and listeners might recall the situation a few years ago when certain Canadian pastors were thrown in jail. I represented them. I've also brought a national class action against the government of Canada, the Trudeau government, over vaccine harms and also over atrocities committed against the unvaccinated in our country.
And so where are they? Are they still pending?
Yes.
They're still in litigation over it?
Status, yes, they're ongoing. As people probably know, those litigations are very much in flux as more and more of the truth emerges from what's been hidden from us by Pfizer, Moderna, and of course our governments, the Biden administration, Trudeau administration, and others. But it's a very, very much an exciting cutting edge area to be in right now. And one never knows what to expect. Every time we think we've heard the worst, something else comes out and just gets more and more like
something else, like a
Hollywood movie. Yeah. So
something else comes up. Yeah. Well, this, it doesn't surprise me because, I mean, we had Scott Shara on the program and they murdered his daughter in a hospital with a three drug cocktail. Goodness. I mean, it just, you know, it never stops. And now we're finding out that there's some of the people inside that knew Fauci were deleting emails and all sorts of violations. I mean, this just came out yesterday in the news, but the thing is now with the podcast and everything else that you're doing here, truth and justice, everybody wants, but this is November coming up. Everybody's going to be going to the polls and there are a lot of these people that don't like Trump. They're finding excuses. And a lot of people that like Trump, but they have a real problem with him and Operation Warp Speed. Obviously, since you're a podcaster, we know that a lot of what you say has to be said with very careful using a scalpel, not a sword. Yeah. And so, you know, because you don't want to let too much out of the bag. But the thing is that Trump, a lot of people feel that he was lied to, that Pfizer and Moderna, basically, they knew they were culturing this mRNA. They knew what it was going to do. Robert Malone is suing Peter Bragan. I mean, all this junk is going on because all these people are being called out. And see, a lot of these people are holding Trump accountable for something that Trump may have been lied to about, and that was the efficacy and the safety of these vaccines. Have you found anything contradictory to that?
Well, in terms of the safety and the efficacy of vaccines, there really isn't any evidence to support that. In fact, even some of the people who really support it, like people like Dr. Paul Offit, who I've had on my show, who's you know, patented many vaccines, he's made a whole career out of it, has made a 180 degree turn in terms of this, of the safety and efficacy of vaccines. I wonder why Mr. Trump, whom actually I support and I admire very much, is still so resilient in his commitment to the safety and efficacy of vaccines. I'm not sure why that is, but I think probably what you're saying is mostly correct. I think he's not a medical doctor. He's not a scientist, but he is a very, very astute, very successful politician. And as such, he's probably relying upon the advice that he's been getting from people who he presumes know a lot about the vaccines and their safety. But I wouldn't be surprised if down the line, Mr. Trump changes his mind about that. One of the things that I think is exceptional about him as a politician is he has in the past shown a willingness to adapt and to admit when he's made a mistake, something very, very refreshing. Of course, Mr. Biden is incapable of doing that because he's probably not corpus mentis, and Mr. Trudeau is incapable of doing that because he's a complete ideologue.
That's an interesting assessment. I'm looking at the situation because of the fact that, you know, Trump still, even if he pushes Operation Warp Speed, and at least he's taking credit for it.
Yes.
You know, and this is the thing about Biden. He won't take credit for anything that's gone wrong. He always wants to pat himself on the back and make you think that everything that's going on right now, including the economy and whatnot, is he takes pride in. And that's the only thing that he will admit to when he's not shoving an ice cream cone in his face or sniffing some young girl's hair.
Or falling off a bicycle.
Yeah, thank you for that. Or falling downstairs or being, you know, I wonder why Jill Biden is there. I mean, isn't that elder abuse?
It's been said.
Yeah, I bet it has. Just to see, we're, you know, as a podcaster, we could have this conversation. But, you know, we have a more serious kind of thing going on here right now, as we brought up at the beginning of the show, this segment anyway, about CCP and how they've infiltrated our government. Yeah. Now, this is the thing. We already know that the Biden administration is heavily tied into the Chinese Communist Party, or at least we suspect it. And there's been enough evidence coming out about their backdoor deals when Joe was VP under Obama. I mean, we have a career politician that's losing his mind, basically, and his son is now in trial today over these gun charges he's trying to get out of. But the thing is that China, we know that they've got troops in Canada right now. They are training. Is that correct? Do you know?
Yes, they have had in a place called Red Deer, which is equidistant between Edmonton and Calgary, which are cities in my home province of Alberta. They've had pilots training there for some time. And, of course, there's a very, very deep relationship. It's just starting to be revealed between the Trudeau Liberals and China. Going back to 2013, before Justin Trudeau became our prime minister, he was asked at a fundraiser, which nation he most admired. And one would have expected him to say the United States or Great Britain, but he said China. And when he was asked why, he said that he admires their basic dictatorship. In other words, in a dictatorship, Mr. Xi, he doesn't have to consult with anybody. He just does whatever he likes. And that's essentially how Canada has been governed during the 9 years of Justin Trudeau's tenure. And we know for certain that there was direct interference in our last two national elections by the Chinese, and that our Canadian government has been suppressing this investigation, trying to stop it at every turn. This is sort of Mr. Trudeau's Watergate, if you will. But it runs much more deeply, and I think it poses a geopolitical threat not just to Canada, but also to the United States. You know, there was an old joke, the late Robin Williams, the comedian, once joked that Canada is a loft apartment over top of a great party. And that was funny in its day. But, and Canada has always been a very friendly neighbor to the U.S. But, what's been happening in recent years is that Canada has becoming more like Cuba than it is like the United States in terms of being a free and democratic nation where individual human rights are protected. And we've moved more towards being a client state of the CCP. And this is expressed through basic allegiance and implementation of everything the World Economic Forum, Agenda 2030 from the UN says, or even the World Health Organization Pandemic Treaty, which is dangerous to the sovereignty of both the United States and Canada. Recently, Vivek Ramaswamy ran for president, as you know, and he said, not jokingly, that the United States maybe needs to look at erecting a northern wall. And that's because you were just talking about these migrants. The migrant problem, as bad as it is in the U.S., it's worse in Canada because we have between 1.5 and 2 million people being brought in legally into this country by our government. And we're housing them and feeding them just the way you are in the United States. But Canada is a much smaller country. In a country of 40 million people, we're bringing in roughly 2 million of these people per year. Mm-hmm. And they don't share our values. They don't share our commitment to freedom. They don't share our history. And they don't share our close and friendly relationship with the United States. And many of them are moving from Canada into the U.S. And as you described, this is a dangerous situation. And I predict that if Mr. Trump is elected and restored to the White House, and I pray that he is, I think he's going to take a much more serious interest in the domestic politics of Canada. And I think that is by necessity.
Well, it is. And see, some of these Chinese policies have actually happened in Canada, and they've been exposed as such because we've had Tamara Leach on the show before she, she was already in hot water. Where is her case right now? Have you been keeping tabs on her?
Yes. It is. It's been going on. It's one of the longest criminal trials of this century. The prosecution is in complete disarray. I would put it this way. The case against Tamara Leach and the other Freedom Convoy organizers is going about as well as the criminal trials that Mr. Trump is facing. And they're fraught by a lot of the same problems. There really isn't solid evidence of any criminal wrongdoing. These are really political trials being played out. And a big part of it is, the CCP is in the background. We all know, we all should understand that they want to destroy Western hegemony, which is essentially U.S. hegemony in the West. And they're using any means to do it apart from a hot war. I think they know and understand that that would be very perilous for them. And so what they're doing is through many different means, they're trying to destroy and demoralize those of us in the West from within. And unfortunately, this has been very, very effective in Canada.
Well, you being a litigator, have they cut off your bank account like they did to so many of the truckers?
I have not had that happen to me yet. However, I have been quote unquote canceled. I was called every name in the book by the Trudeau people. I was called a latent anti-Semite, even though I'm a devout Christian. And the last time I checked, Jesus is a Jew. But I was called a latent anti-Semite by Justin Trudeau's private henchman, who is a man named Bernie Farber. And he's heading up all the hate laws, the new hate laws that are coming in, hate speech laws that are coming into effect in Canada. But, you know, what's happening in Canada is very interesting politically. Right now we have a leader named Pierre Poilievre, who is the leader of our Conservative Party. In Canada, our Conservative Party is sort of like the Republican Party. And when he started to rise in popularity was right around the same time that Mr. Trump started to look like the Republican candidate for the presidency in the U.S. And right now, if we had an election in Canada, Mr. Poilievre would win the most massive majority in the history of our country. And I think that what that is actually a sympathetic response in Canada to what's happening in the United States with Mr. Trump. And I think Canadians are watching what's happening in the U.S. very, very closely, because, of course, it has very, very deep impacts for us and our own political security. Everyone in Canada realizes or should realize that our fate geopolitically is totally bound up with that of the United States. And that's why what's happening, everything that the Biden administration is doing, is also happening in Canada, perhaps to a more severe degree.
Now, the thing is, though, is that the more severe degree, this includes messing with the elections, with yes. censorship, with you know, leading people to believe. I mean, how many people? You got TikTok in Canada now. They haven't banned that yet because apparently this is what the left enjoys having out there, because they can use that as a brainwashing tool for Generation Z, which are clueless about anything. And they're sitting there whining about the fact that they got to work 40 hours. And I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah. You know, we really have a problem now. And I mean, this is happening in the United States. I mean, we have people doing the TikTok challenges, and I'm like, Tide Pod, anyone? You know, I've got a real problem with the way these people are thinking, because, you know, they'd rather go out and protest, you know, against Israel. And I'm just like laughing at the International Criminal Court. We have so many bigger problems going on in America right now, and you're describing what's happening in Canada, and it's slowly trickling down our neighbors from the north, and we have people migrating from Canada into the United States. Nobody's talking about the northern border. Well, I mean, a few people are, but, you know, you're keeping a close eye on the political spectrum here, and you just said the very same operative thing, that if the election were held right now, Trump would probably win in a landslide. Yes. And I mean, the Republican Party right now has been playing too nicey-nice. Has that been the same in Canada with the Conservative Party?
Well, what's been happening, I think that, you know, this is the interesting thing, is that Conservative Party is not that different ideologically than the Liberals. They're probably further to the right, but they certainly are not a far right party. Of course, anyone who is not a complete socialist these days in the West is branded far right, as you know. Mr. Trump is not far right by any stretch of the imagination. But they are being, you know, hit with these labels. And we are seeing, you know, suppression of free speech. Mr. Trudeau, during a recent speech, actually accused Mr. Poilievre of you know, wanting to burn the country down. Which is really, it's disturbing to hear a leader of our country speak in these terms. We're really not used to that. It's not something that we're accustomed to here. But, you know, there's a deeper concern about, you know, the attack on Western culture. And Canada, the United States, and Great Britain and Australia and New Zealand, countries like that, the Anglosphere, if you will, we have a very deep tradition of you know, having respect for democracy, for individual human rights, for having interest in prosperity and self-determination. And that is being whittled away at and is being destroyed, or at least people are trying to do that. And I really see the CCP as a sort of the eye of Sauron behind all of this. However, I think that just highlights and accentuates the importance of the upcoming election in your country in November. I think Mr. Trump, as I said, if he's restored to the White House, and I pray that he is, that I think that's going to have a very, very significant impact on all other countries who are historically very close cousins of the United States. We're all sort of descended from, you know, this great British tradition of common law. And that's why I'm very hopeful that we're going to see a renaissance of conservatism, return to respect for human rights, and respect for the protection of the middle class and the working class, who have been discriminated against the most, not only by COVID, but by a lot of these socialist policies, which tend to divide everybody into sort of this uber elite. And the rest of us who are useful idiots are slaves, at least in the eyes of our betters.
Well, I don't know. I always question who the betters actually are, yeah, and where they're
allegiance. Their terminology, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I picked up on that. but the funny thing about all of this is that, you know, we are all watching what's happening to Trump. A lot of the citizens down here are looking at this going, well, they could do that to us. It was just like we just had Bud Cummins, Malinowski's attorney, on the last segment, and he was talking about the fact that, hey, what they did to Brian Malinowski, shooting him in the head, coming into his house at 6 a.m., I'm sure you heard that.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is just like another Waco, where they send cattle cars of ATF agents in and SWAT team come in heavy. I'm sure that the RCMP has about that same kind of, you know, moniker on their back. Because I've heard some of the things that they did, destroying people's machinery and dumping junk in their gas tanks to render them useless. I mean, this is like political terrorism on its own citizens. But see, we operate here as a constitutional republic, and I think that's the only saving grace that we aren't more like Canada, is because we have the Constitution here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that part of it is also the Bill of Rights. You know, the attack on free speech that's being perpetrated by our government in Canada, although there are some people in the United States, like the NPR, that would like to invoke these types of laws in your country, you know, that First Amendment is holding strong. And we're fighting very hard, those of us who work in my sphere in Canada, to preserve freedom of speech. Because we understand that the only type of speech that needs legal protection is that which would tend to offend. But what's happening in our country, it's already happened in Great Britain and Australia and in other countries, is that the government is defining hate speech as any speech that they do not like. Now, it seems to me that in the United States, it's more difficult to do that because of the strength of that First Amendment. But that doesn't mean that it isn't under attack. I heard the new leader of your NPR in your country recently state that the greatest enemy to freedom in the United States is the First Amendment, because they want to protect everyone from being offended. They want everybody to be in safe spaces. But it's interesting to note on this free speech point and the rise of anti-Semitism that we've had these sympathetic protests at universities, both in the United States and Canada, where, you know, really what really the battleground is free speech. You know, what are you, what can you say? Are you entitled? Can you say that you don't like Jewish people? Is that something that you can say legally? Can you legally say that you think that what the state of what Hamas is doing, that's anti-Semitic, that's wrong? And so these are the things that we're fighting for, both in the United States and Canada and other countries. I think this is the real battleground. But it's going to be very interesting to see how this unfolds in the coming months.
Well, you saw what happened in Scotland, because they had a Middle Eastern leading them, and they were pushing this hate speech stuff, and everybody and their brother, and what did he get, 9,000 complaints? And most of them were unfounded. Most of them were just like revenge calls. And I'm just like, man, all these people, I mean, with this COVID nonsense and everything that you've been investigating, obviously you've seen the same kind of parameters and Hegelian dialectics that these people have been using to take and twist the truth and turn families inward against each other as a means of divide and conquer. I mean, you see the same thing up in Canada that we do down here.
Yes. And you know, it's this attack on the family is not by accident. And again, this is aimed at demoralization in countries like the United States and Canada. We understand that the constituent unit really of your republic or of our country is the family unit. And really, if you think about it, a country like the United States is really one big family. And when you cause division within that family and you cause conflict within that family, whether it's class conflict or over sexual orientation or political affiliation, then you're going to divide up that family, and that family won't be as strong. And I think we're seeing, again, all of these threads, these sources of division are all coming, I believe, out of the CCP and being expressed through things like the World Economic Forum, UN Agenda 2030, and also these NGOs, these non-governmental organizations that stir up hatred, influence elections. People like, I'm going to use his name, people like George Soros, people like Bill Gates. They have an interest. They seem to have an interest in destroying the Western hegemony and to even eliminate 7/8 of the world's population, if you can believe it. That's something that the World Economic Forum states very clearly as part of its agenda, and the UN has signed on to that. These things are horrifying, and they're quite contrary to the values that those of us in the West have held for many centuries now.
Yeah, well, see, and so is Dennis Edwards from the Club of Rome. They've signed on to this thing, too. And, you know, somebody took the liberty of tearing down all of those, the guidestones down there in Georgia, which I'm sure you heard about, because I think that's a statement to the elite out there that we're not going to tolerate this. And the fortunate thing is, so many of our Americans are armed, and I think that's where this is all going to end up when it's all said and done, is we're going to have to defend ourselves to keep from being overrun. Well, Leighton Gray, thank you so much. We're out of time for the day's show, but thank you for bringing all of this stuff to light and letting us know about the conflicts up there and how close we are to facing the same kind of things that you're facing right now.
Thanks, Dave. God bless, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too, the same. Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. We hope you got a lot out of this segment today. In the meantime, because we do have the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, go out and do something nice for somebody today and enjoy your weekend. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America. Yahweh, righteous son, he is Yahweh, the three in one, he
is Yahweh. For the past 20 years, the Power Mall has been a trailblazer, leading the way in providing our customers with only the best health, wellness, and readiness products. We have worked hand in hand, helping to grow many small businesses, and we continue to provide exceptional customer service, educating our customers so they can make informed purchases. You can shop with confidence, knowing that we have personally vetted every product that we offer. Your health and well-being mean so much to us. We have championed voting with your dollars. And when you shop with the Power Mall, you are helping to keep ever so important and often censored health information in the forefront. Buy from the good guys. Shop thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Or call 877-817-9829. Are you tired of trying to figure out how to get all your fruits and vegetables into your busy lifestyle? OptiVita Complete Essentials provides you with 22 whole food vitamins and minerals, 29 fruits and vegetables, probiotics, antioxidants, and botanicals for ultimate health and nutrition. 30 individual packs, now less than $3 per day. Get your OptiVita Complete Essentials by calling 877-817-9829 or order online at thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the OptiVita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sera enzyme for the lungs, and my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier, and I don't hear that crud in his lungs.
Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com.